BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivis. So the most common cause of cancer-related death worldwide, lung cancer, is often vilified as a smoker's disease, when in fact even those of us who've never smoked a stick in our life could fall victim. Responsible for 1.38 million deaths annually, doctors and researchers are working quickly to find new ways and avenues of treatment. Dr. Dr. Muhammad Ibrahim E. Wahid and Professor Liam Chong Kien are here to tell us more about the illness and some of the latest research developments. How are the both of you today?
Good. Okay. Very well, thank you.
You know, what is the prevalence of lung cancer in Malaysia? Is it the number one killer amongst the cancers?
Yeah, lung cancer is the number one killer of all cancers in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Like it is throughout the world.
Right. Pretty much amongst the men, or as a general population?
More so in among the men, but overall, lung cancer is the leading killer of all cancers in Malaysia.
Okay. I'm very interested to know how much women are predisposed to lung cancer.
Actually, women are at higher risk of developing lung cancer than men. Especially women who do not smoke, they can develop lung cancer. And that's a peculiar feature, especially among Asian women more so. Whereas in the West, women who actually develop lung cancer, majority of them are smokers. Whereas in Asia, more than 30% of women who develop lung cancer are never smokers.
That is really funny. And yes. We don't know why?
We do not exactly know why, but probably genetics and environment probably play a role.
Okay. I was also reading that around the world, in cultures like in the UK and stuff, the number of women smokers who are dying of lung cancer is growing at a very, very fast pace. Amongst the men, I think as a general population, it is actually dropping. But the number of women who are actually developing lung cancer is growing at a very alarming stage. Yes. So in our country, it's not so much the women smokers, but the women who do develop lung cancer are not smokers.
Yes.
That is pretty difficult to determine, isn't it? Is lung cancer still considered a smokers-only condition? I mean, barring aside the women in this country. Is it pretty much still considered a smokers-only condition?
Most of the cases are among smokers, but it's like Prof Liam says, there's a growing trend now to see among non-smokers. So we do see quite a lot, especially women with specific subtypes like adenocarcinoma, are seen mainly in non-smokers.
Adenocarcinoma is a word that I kept looking at all the time when I was reading in lung cancer. There are many varieties of adenocarcinoma. Could you just go through with me? And I understand it goes down to a molecular level.
Yes. Lung cancer is broadly divided into small cell lung cancer and non-small cell lung cancer. Non-small cell lung cancer accounts for the majority of all lung cancers. In fact, it's getting more and more common. I think it accounts for about 90% of all lung cancer cases. Mm-hmm. So in the non-small cell lung cancer group, adenocarcinoma is the most common type. The other types are squamous cell carcinoma and large cell carcinoma. Even in never smokers, adenocarcinoma is the most common type. Even among smokers, adenocarcinoma has overtaken the other types such as squamous cell carcinoma to be the most common type of non-small cell lung cancer.
Right, why is that?
That is also because of the introduction of filter cigarettes many, many years ago. So filter cigarettes filter up the large particles, you know, the tar, the nicotine, and the smokers need to inhale more deeply now in order to get the same kind of kick from the nicotine.
Right.
So the delivery of this deep inhalation will mean that the carcinogens which are found in cigarette smokes are delivered to the deep parts of the lung, and adenocarcinoma are that type that develops in deeper part of the lung.
Right.
In contrast to squamous cell carcinoma, which used to be the most common type, which happens in the upper airways or the more proximal airways.
Right. Would you say that was easier to treat, or would you say the one adenocarcinoma is the one that's more difficult to treat?
Adenocarcinoma is more slow growing, but the problem with adenocarcinoma is tend to be more silent because it occurs deeper in the depths of the lung. It does not cause symptoms early, mm-hmm. in contrast to squamous cell carcinoma, which tends to produce cough, so that would trigger off the individual to seek treatment early.
Right.
So adenocarcinoma are usually diagnosed very late because they tend to be silent at the earlier stages of the disease.
I think this may sound silly because I think everybody knows already what are some of the causes of lung cancer.
Yes.
Just to run through carcinogens, you have asbestos gas, radon gas. What is that?
Radon gas is actually found in the background, so where you
in
cannot...
In the environment.
Yes, in the environment. So in certain places, depending on where the house is situated, you may have background radon, as a cause, people implicate it as a cause of cancer when the person doesn't smoke, or you may add to the risk of developing lung cancer if the person also smoke.
So we wouldn't know if we have radon gas
yes.
in our
yes.
backyard or
no.
in
yeah.
our house. We
yes.
wouldn't know. Okay, yeah. there's no test to check for it. I'm getting
yeah.
paranoid here.
Right.
Atmospheric pollution, industrial toxins, as you mentioned, coal tar, heavy metals, radioactive materials. Passive smoking, of course, is one of the other causes. How dangerous is secondhand smoking?
Secondhand smoking certainly increases the risk, but it's difficult to quantify because, unless you are... A direct smoker, is difficult to quantify the amount that a person inhales from environmental tobacco smoke. But certainly it is a risk for developing lung cancer.
Okay. I was reading that lung cancer is considered a heterogeneous disease. What does that what does that actually mean? What does it mean?
Because like I mentioned, even for non-small cell lung cancer, we have adenocarcinoma, we have squamous cell carcinoma, and also we have large cell carcinoma. Even within the adenocarcinoma itself, in recent years through research, we are able to molecularly profile the adenocarcinoma. Certain types of adenocarcinoma tend to occur in non-smokers or never-smokers, and certain types tend to occur in smokers. So for example, in never-smokers who develop adenocarcinoma, epidermal growth factor receptor, or EGFR mutation, is a very common type of mutation that leads to lung cancer formation in never-smokers, especially in Asians. So some other patients have other molecular markers that defined adenocarcinoma. So in more recent years, we are beginning to see more and more types of mutation, like HER2 mutation or ALK gene rearrangement. So these are subgroups of adenocarcinoma. So that's the reason why we say lung cancer is a very heterogeneous disease. And also in adenocarcinoma, a subgroup of lung cancer itself, there are so many molecular profiles which define or which drives the cancer to start in the first place, and also in a way helps to direct the form of treatment, because
exactly.
if we are able to molecularly profile that tumor, we will be able to find a target that targets particularly at that tumor rather than treat it non-specifically.
Okay. We know that smokers are very predisposed to developing lung cancer, but have we not developed a screening process to identify someone or to catch it at a very, very early stage?
Okay. You see, when do we do screening? If we do screening, means we are able to perform a test that is very easy, can perform on majority of the population, and catching the symptom or catching the disease in the early part changes the outcome. So these are some of the prerequisites. Now, with problem with lung cancer, it's the only way to detect it is actually to do scans. Now, there are these so-called low-dose CT scans, but it's not generally accepted as a major screening tool, because you're actually exposing patients also to radiation.
It's costly.
And it's costly.
Yeah.
So it's not cheap. It's not, and it exposes to unnecessary radiation. And how do you screen? Do you screen every year? Every 2 years? Every 3 years? There's no specific guidelines on this. I know there are a lot of people out there who are doing all sorts of tumor markers. The people, commercial sets that selling, doing CEA, CA125, all these testing. Now, they're actually not a screening test. We don't use tumor markers as screening. We use tumor markers as a guide. So when patients have been diagnosed with cancer, we use it as a guide to how well, you know, we're doing on treatment. We give treatment, the markers come down, we know that patient's responding to treatment. If the markers go up, we know something's gone wrong somewhere. But a lot of people, they are, you know, labs are selling this as a screening, and that creates a lot of anxiety. Because what happens is, sometimes the CA may just flicker up a little bit.
Yep.
Or the CA-199 is a good one that actually quite common, it appears to be slightly high. And people get paranoid. And then they start doing CT scans, MRIs, PET scan to find out where the cancers are. And it's also misleading because even though you may have cancer, but your marker tests are normal. So it doesn't mean that tests are normal. Oh, okay, I don't have cancer. No, it doesn't work like
that. So a lot of false negative, false positive kind of results, which you want to avoid. But then again, you know, we're concerned. We smoke. And we want to make sure we don't get lung cancer. And so when somebody comes and tells me, hey, you know what, if you do this, you know, you probably be able to gauge whether you are predisposed to lung cancer, I'd buy it because I don't want to change my habits. And this is the way to go forward. But, you know, what are some of the symptoms of lung cancer? When I was reading, 3 weeks of persistent cough is a symptom. Would you agree with me?
Yes. I mean, cough is one of the symptoms of lung cancer, but usually cough only starts very late. So like the adenocarcinoma being the most common type of lung cancer nowadays is silent at the earlier stages. So by the time a patient who has lung cancer cough, it usually means that it's quite advanced. The other symptoms will be difficulty in breathing, which is also a very late symptom, or pain in the chest or tightness in the chest. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the symptoms, but unfortunately, they are quite late symptoms.
Right. They always describe lung cancer as one of those silent killers because you always sort of find out at the end. How do you diagnose when somebody comes to you with lung cancer?
Okay. Now, first of all, what we do is we do a history, an examination, examine the patients, you know, we can look up for signs, you know, can look at notes or signs of whether they're changes in their nails, you know, called clubbing. So then we go on to do, usually we'd like to do a scan and also a bronchoscopy. We do bronchoscopies. Usually bronchoscopy, if the tumor is in the tubes, as it were, in the lung, then you can get biopsies from them, but sometimes bronchoscopies can be negative. So sometimes you may want to do what we call CT-guided biopsies. So when you do CT scan, you see where the tumor is. If it's located towards the peripheral of the lung, a radiologist can sometimes stick a needle in and do a test on the
cells,
on the cells, mm-hmm. on the biopsy specimen.
Okay.
And then we send that for further testing. And there are very specific tests that we can do to diagnose lung cancer.
Okay. Yeah. Doesn't sound like a straightforward process. I mean, with cancer of the breast, it's a lot easier to get into and take a specimen for testing. Can you not, based on the image, tell whether one has got lung cancer or not?
It's not only based on the image, but we need to know what the cell types. Just now, you know, Prof. Liam described the different cell types.
Yeah. Molecular.
So we need to know the cell types, you know, because you know, there's the small cell and the non-small cell. Mm-hmm. They're treated differently. The commonest are the non-small cell. But, you know, there are also other things. Sometimes there are other tumors that go to the lung. So it may not be a lung primary. It might be a lung secondary. Now, this is something that people quite often make a mistake. Because when the cancer is from the lung, we have to know whether it's primary or secondary. If it's primary, that means the origin is from the lung. If it's secondary, it means it probably started elsewhere, mm-hmm. you know, from the colon or from the breast or from the other organs from the body, and then it goes to the lung. So that's not lung cancer.
Yep.
Lung cancer means it originates from the lung. That's why when we do a biopsy, we have to characterize the type of so-called pathology and do further specific testing, make sure that this is from the lung and not from somewhere
spread
else.
Spread from somewhere else.
Yeah.
We'll go into the nitty-gritties of, you know, small cell lung cancer and non-small cell lung cancer. We're discussing lung cancer today. If you have a question for Datu Dr. Muhammad Ibrahim A. Wahid or Professor Liam Chong Kin, do send us a text message 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi, Dato Dr. Muhammad Ibrahim A. Wahid, clinical oncologist, together with Professor Liam Chong Kin, professor and consultant in respiratory medicine with me. We're discussing lung cancer here in Malaysia. You know, Dr. Ibrahim, when you just left off just now, we were talking about small cell lung cancer and non-small cell lung cancer. What is the difference?
Okay. Basically, it's the tissue type, the histology. Each of these have got specific characteristics. Now, they're actually managed differently. Because in this non-small cell group, the primary treatment, if possible, for early stages is usually surgery. Whereas the small cell, they even though they're small, they can be in small in terms of size, they can actually spread quite quickly and they behave very differently. And predominant treatment for those kind of tumors is usually chemotherapy. So, and surgery plays very, very little role because they, as I said, they tend to spread quite quickly. So that, we very rarely or not, we don't see small cell very often. Bulk of the patients that we see, about 90% above, are the non-small cell,
which is also very aggressive and often at a very late stage.
Mm-hmm. But they're potentially treatable for early stage.
I see. Okay. If a patient has non-small cell lung cancer that is inoperable, what does this mean for him or her?
Okay. For inoperable lung cancer, first of all, we need to stage them. We need to know where the cancer is. It's in the bone, it's in the liver, the bulk of the tumor. Now, sometimes if they are just locally advanced, and although surgeons can't operate, sometimes we can give treatment to make it smaller and make the treatment more and make the cancer more amenable to surgery, downstage them with some chemotherapy. There are cases of stage 4 where the cancer has gone to many organs, many parts of the body, and it's truly deemed inoperable. Then, you know, the traditionally, we use chemotherapy. Now, for a long time, chemotherapy, various types of drugs have been used. Now, when I started my career in oncology, most of the patients usually die very quickly because the choice of drugs were very limited.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the chemotherapy generally gave the same sort of
outcome.
So they've did a trial comparing, you know, regimen A, B, C, D, and we reached a plateau. But what happened was in the year 2000, they came out with this new targeted therapy, and it was just a tablet which actually made a difference in treatment. And for these are for advanced stage cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It was started initially for patients who failed chemotherapy and they were eligible to have these tablets, these drugs. And the first drug that was in this category was called gefitinib. And later on, you know, subsequent studies showed that it was useful in a certain group like EGFR positive mutation. And those who had EGFR positive mutation benefited from these drugs more than EGFR negative. So you know, so the management of lung cancer has shifted depending on some of these molecular testing and the choice of treatment between chemotherapy or taking tablets like gefitinib actually depends on the EGFR testing.
Right. Yeah. I was also reading that patients, of course, don't want to live just 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 years. People want to live another 10 years, another 20 years, another 30 years. Is that quite possible with lung cancer now? Because, you know...
For 20, 30 years.
Yes. Even 10 years is a lot.
It's...
For someone with lung cancer.
You know, for stage... Okay. Here we're talking about stage 4 disease. Stage 1 and stage 2, they are potentially curable. Yeah. I mean... But stage 4 disease, where the cancer spread everywhere. Now, when, you know, in 1990s, average survival was about 3 months. Now, we can't make something, you know, a figure from 3 months to 20 years overnight. You know, medical technology takes time. Yeah. Now, but what we have done is we've moved this goalposts from 3 months to beyond 1 year. So we're talking about averages, but you know, average means it could be from a few months, or there are some lucky people who can live for many years, 3 or 4 years. I think some of us have got patients who have survived for 3 or 4 years on, you know, with stage 4 disease that was, you know, previously not heard of, but it is seen with modern day therapy. So they shouldn't give up hope, or they shouldn't regard stage 4 lung cancer as a death sentence or immediate death sentence.
Right.
They should still seek for treatment, because there are drugs, many drugs that are available that can help them, either by injection or by tablets.
Tablets or injections. I mean, does this mean that they need this course of treatment throughout the 3 and 4 years that they actually live? Every month, for an example.
Yes. I think once somebody has stage 4 disease, whatever treatment that we give the patient is controlling the disease, because we are not talking about cure. So we are not, whatever treatment that we give to the patient is very unlikely to eliminate the cancer totally, meaning that if you do not eliminate the cancer, the treatment only helps to control the disease. So the moment you stop the treatment, then the cancer will grow again.
Okay.
Yeah. So once, if somebody is unfortunate to have advanced stage disease, the treatment will be very prolonged treatment. So the advantage of this new targeted treatment is that it's highly effective in the correct group of individual. For example, we are talking about EGFR mutation positive.
We'll come to that in a bit. Yeah.
So, because we are giving specific treatment, so it is highly effective, and the side effects are very minimal, so that individual is able to tolerate prolonged treatment until a time where the treatment fails. Then we have to go on to other lines of treatment. Like Dr. Ibrahim has mentioned, now we have more drugs in our armamentarium, so we can offer the patient treatment. So lung cancer nowadays is converted from a disease with a very short lifespan to what we call a chronic illness. Chronic illness means the patient lives with the disease for a long period of time.
A longer period of time. Yes. What is this EGFR mutation that you're talking about?
It's one of the... I mean, it's a recent discovery, certainly more than 10 years now, that these individuals who have lung cancer, because of this EGFR mutation, it's because of this EGFR mutation that individual develops lung cancer. And who are these individuals who have EGFR mutation positive cancer? These are particularly common among Asians, among females, and more so among never smokers. So never smokers, one of the reasons why they develop lung cancer is because of this, through this mechanism of EGFR mutation.
Okay.
So if their tumors are EGFR mutated, then there's a target, there's a drug that targets this EGFR mutation. This drug blocks off the signaling through inhibiting the signals that is transmitted within the cell. The EGFR mutation programs the cell to actually divide and proliferate. That's how cancer comes about. So the drug actually blocks off this intracellular signaling. So the cell, without the drive to grow and to divide and to survive, the cancer cell dies.
And this is Irregardless of whether you're, which stage of cancer you're in, that means, are you saying even in stage four cancer,
yes,
and you have an EGFR mutation,
yes,
it will still be, you will still be able
this,
to
these drugs
manage
are mainly
it?
Used for advanced lung cancer. Like we mentioned earlier on, if it's early stage lung cancer, stage one and stage two, mm-hmm, surgery will be the best option because that will that is a best option for a cure.
Okay.
So you do not need to give the patient EGFR tyrosine kinase inhibitor, the drugs that inhibit this signaling in early stage lung cancer, because once you do surgery, the cancer is removed, then the person is cured of this cancer. These drugs are mainly used in advanced stages of the disease, like stage 3B or stage 4 disease.
What about amongst the smokers? Are they not predisposed to EGFR mutation?
They are less likely, although not exclusive, they are less likely. Mm-hmm. More common among never smokers, but even smokers do have EGFR mutated tumors. So we have to test particularly all patients with adenocarcinoma for this EGFR mutation. If they are positive, then they should be given drugs that target this EGFR mutation.
Okay, I'm just trying to put the puzzle together.
Yes.
What is the relationship between non-small cell lung cancer and adenocarcinoma?
Adenocarcinoma is a subtype of non-small cell lung cancer. So like I mentioned, lung cancer as a group is divided into small cell, which about 10% of all lung cancers are small cell, and the other 90% are non-small cell lung cancer.
Okay.
And within the non-small cell lung cancer, adenocarcinoma is the most common type.
Okay. What's the prevalence rate like for these non-small cell lung cancer?
For the Malaysian statistics, lung cancer, it's 18 per 100,000 population. And we have about close to 2,000 new cases of lung cancer diagnosed a year in Malaysia. So about 90% of these will be non-small cell lung cancer, and majority of these, I would say probably 70 to 80% are adenocarcinoma.
Okay. And do you have an opinion about whether all patients with adenocarcinoma of the lung should be tested for EGFR mutation as opposed to just those with metastatic disease? Do you reckon?
Yes, because with this new development, we feel that all patients with lung adenocarcinoma should have the EGFR testing done as a reflex, as a routine, at the time that the pathologist make a diagnosis of adenocarcinoma. Because when we take the biopsy or when we do a surgical resection, we send the specimen to the pathologist. If the pathologist make a diagnosis of adenocarcinoma, they should automatically do EGFR mutation, so that once we get the answer back that is adenocarcinoma, we also at the same time knows that whether this is EGFR mutation positive or EGFR mutation negative, because that will influence the treatment greatly.
Okay.
This is particularly so if the patient has advanced disease, where we want to treat the patient with either chemotherapy or this targeted therapy.
Okay, is it in the cases of where it's inoperable or even when you're operable?
No, that's a very important point.
Okay.
Here, we are treating inoperable advanced stage.
Okay.
That's where the place for this drug. Now, if somebody was diagnosed with stage 1 disease and, you know, with a lump, the biopsy confirmed adenocarcinoma, should be taken out. Now, there's no way, they say, doctor, can I have a choice? Can I take these tablets for my stage 1 disease? No, that's not the correct way of managing stage 1 or stage 2 lung cancer. You do not give them those tablets. Because all these medications, they have, a limited activity. You know, these cells they're quite clever. You know, what are we doing with EGFR, all these tyrosine kinase inhibitors? We are blocking certain pathways in the cell division process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens is, we can't block these forever. At some point in time, these cells bypass the block and starts to grow again. So, if we are treating early stage lung cancer with these tablets, sometimes these tablets may only work for 6 months or 8 months or 9 months or a year. And the cancer starts to grow again.
It becomes immune to it.
And it yes, correct. So the early stage, we have to emphasize the correct treatment is still surgery. These are patients who are advanced inoperable stage, stage 4 disease, who, you know, sometimes, you know, there is, we make a choice whether to give them chemotherapy. They may not be well enough for chemotherapy, maybe, you know. Then we have a choice of offering them tablets if they are EGFR positive.
Interesting. How many Malaysians with advanced NSCLC actually carried EGFR mutation? Sorry, that meant how many of Malaysians actually who have non-small cell lung cancer carry the EGFR mutation?
So we recently concluded a study mm-hmm. on a small group of patients, about 150 patients.
Okay.
As a group, patients with non-small cell lung cancer, about close to 40% of them have EGFR mutation, are EGFR mutation positive. But for among the non-smoker, the people who never smoke, it's about 60% over, about two-thirds of never smokers have EGFR mutation positive.
Okay.
And the mutation is also more positive among those patients with adenocarcinoma compared to the other cell type, mainly because it's all influenced by smoking. So if you are a non-smoker, the chances of getting EGFR mutation is about 60% over.
It's much higher.
Yes. Okay. If you are a smoker, it's about 10% to 15%.
Okay, I'm just going to digress to some of the questions that we've received. Dr. Raja wants to know, does molecular screening aid in diagnosis of cancer of the lung? Does molecular screening actually aid in diagnosing of cancer of the lung?
We talk about molecular screening or molecular testing.
Oh,
so here
he says screening.
Screening means, you know, checking.
There isn't
a molecular screening for lung cancer.
Okay.
That we know, but there, you know, there are some people. Again, just like, you know, the blood testing for CEA, okay. There are now labs developing this commercial package doing genetic screening, as it were, to see whether you're at risk for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are problems with it because you don't have cancer and then you do some of these so-called genetic profiling and then it comes up that you are at risk of certain types of cancer. And what do you do? I mean, if the genetic profiling comes up that you're at risk of lung cancer, you're going to remove your lungs. You can't do that.
Or spend the rest of your life worrying about it.
Mm. So there are implications and there are problems with so-called molecular screening. And I don't think it's acceptable yet because we don't know how to you know, we don't know who are the people who eventually will develop this disease.
Right.
But when we talk about when somebody's been diagnosed as cancer, and we do send these tests for molecular profiling now. Yes, we do. And to look at certain subtypes like what Prof. Liam mm-hmm. has said.
And to determine the treatment
and
options.
And the treatment options,
sure.
Yes.
How much do genes play a part in one being, you know, predisposed to lung cancer?
It's difficult to place a figure, but there's always an interplay between genes and environment. So there are people who smoke who do not develop lung cancer, but if you're genetically prone, no? Even a small amount of smoking or even you don't smoke, you can get lung cancer. So no, there's a lot of things we still do not understand, but certainly there's an interplay between genetic and also the environment.
Okay. Yeah. In my notes, I have EGFR TKI. What is that? Okay. No, we're complicating things even more.
Okay. EGFR is epidermal growth factor receptor.
Okay.
And TKIs, tyrosine kinase inhibitors, these are the class of drugs which are so-called targeting certain pathways of the cell division process.
The pills you were talking about
The pills
about just
that
now.
We were talking about. So some of these new drugs like gefitinib and erlotinib falls into these categories where they internally can block the whole path, the cascade of chemical reaction that enables the cells to grow.
Okay, very interesting. And how do you test for this? How do you test for this molecular level that a person is
in? So that's why we were saying about molecular profiling, molecular testing for the presence of EGFR mutation. So these drugs work only if the tumor is having this EGFR mutation. It does not work if there's no EGFR mutation.
And screening would be bronchoscope?
Based on the biopsy specimen, we take a biopsy in order to confirm the diagnosis of lung cancer.
Okay.
And based on the same sample that we have taken out, we'll test it for EGFR mutation.
Okay. Yeah. How important is it to give lung cancer patients the right drug?
It's very, very important because the right drug will mean the response will be better, the patient is likely to respond, to live longer, and the side effects are also will be less.
Okay. So in advanced stages of lung cancer, you're saying that it'll be great if you live more than a year with the right treatment?
Yes. I mean, we can actually see patients surviving more than a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in there have been a study quite recent, recently there are several studies being published. Now, as I said, many years ago, the treatment option for lung cancer is just, for advanced stage lung cancer, stage 4 lung cancer, is just chemotherapy. Now, since the development of these TKIs, there have been many studies looking at head-to-head comparison, whether you can, you know, provide an alternative treatment instead of giving chemo, because, you know, some people, the word chemo, you know, they make them run away 1,000 miles and you never see them again. So sometimes, you know, by having these tests, we are opening up more options. So nowadays what we do is, after the so-called IPAS study, there was a study, it was a Pan-Asia study, where they looked at patients with adenocarcinoma and they looked at dividing into patients giving chemotherapy and this drug called gefitinib. And what they found was, you know, this, the outcome was good, just as good. That means you can actually give gefitinib to patients, and those who benefit most are the EGFR positive. Those who are EGFR negative did not benefit from this. So when you do testing for EGFR and the patient has EGFR positive, there is a choice now where the doctors, instead of giving chemotherapy, can tell the patients, hey, you can take these drugs instead of having chemotherapy for your advanced lung cancer.
How have patients reacted to this treatment? I mean, okay, just before I go to that, I can imagine that this is costly. It is extremely costly. And that is one of the questions via Twitter. How much does it cost?
Yeah, I mean,
because you're going to do this every month, you know, as a maintenance kind of a, you know, therapy.
Cancer treatment is not cheap.
No.
And with newer drugs, the cost is only going to go up because there's a lot of research, money spent in doing research, in coming up with these drugs that, you know, that's appropriate for certain groups of patients. So we can't blame the drug company for putting a high cost to the drug, but that's the reality. The treatment is going to be prolonged and the treatment is going to be costly.
Okay. Yes. And how have patients reacted to this treatment?
I think patients, when you give them a choice, they are obviously happier. And there are patients, you know, because one of the good things about these drugs is it's got very little side effects. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cause nausea, vomiting, hair loss, which is one of the three most sort of common fear factor when it comes to cancer treatment. They worry about losing their hair, they worry about nausea, they worry about vomiting. So with these drugs, those three fear factors are immediately eliminated. The main side effects, of course, they do have other side effects. Main side effects, these drugs, is a skin rash and sometimes diarrhea. But those are manageable, and after being on the drug for some time, you know, patients get used to having a bit more sort of, you know, rash on their face, and eventually they somehow cope with, you know, we give them creams and some potions and whatever to clean their skin. So they do manage it. And one of the thing about this kind of treatment is you can give it for over many years, which you can't do with chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. Chemotherapy, you can only give a certain number of cycles. Then after that, you know, you knock out the patient's bone marrow and they take a long time to recover, and you can't give chemotherapy
too often.
You can't give it for a long period of time. So you give about 6 cycles or 7 cycles or 8 cycles, you stop. But with these drugs, you can carry on for many years, for many months and even years. The main side effects being after several months is fatigue. So that is sometimes the limiting factor for some of these drugs. But generally, they are well tolerated. And patients don't mind taking tablets, but they do mind having injections.
Right. Okay. And also, I suppose, with something like lung cancer, which, you know, especially in the most advanced stages, mm-hmm. Hopes of recovering has been pretty bleak all this time, I suppose. It is an option, provided you can actually afford it. What are some of the things that you've observed that would help people cope with anxieties and stresses of lung cancer? I cannot afford it.
I think that's always a difficult, you know, when you know when you have something, patients will benefit from certain treatment. Sometimes we refer to in government hospitals, but even then, some of these drugs are not
available
or not fully funded. But sometimes they can apply for special funds or special permission from the ministry to get these drugs funded. But they are only available to
a small group of people.
Mm-hmm. But yes, it is always very, very difficult thing to tell the, you know, when patients tell you they can't afford. It's tough, yeah.
It is, I'm sure. Yeah. What is your advice to lung cancer patients and cigarette smoking? Just to conclude, Dr. Professor.
Prevention is always better than cure. And since smoking is a very well-known risk factor for lung cancer, so for those people who are still smoking, I would advise them to stop smoking, because the advantages of stopping smoking is many. Apart from preventing lung cancer, there are many other cancers which can be related to smoking. And smoking also brings about other diseases like chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, strokes, and heart disease.
Yep.
So for smokers, my advice is stop smoking.
Yep. Dr. Ibrahim?
Same thing here. I think it's cheaper to stop smoking than to pay for cancer treatment. Yeah.
Thank you both very much for joining us. At least we know there are options available if you think you want to go for it. Yes. Dr. Muhammad Ibrahim A. Wahid, clinical oncologist, together with Professor Liam Chong Kin, professor and consultant in respiratory medicine on lung cancer in Malaysia, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.